Hello and welcome. It is episode 15 of the Club Racing UK podcast with My Supercar. We've got quite a good episode on here today and we've got a really cool guest as well. So we'll just go ahead and dive straight into it, chaps. So we have the usual suspects, Nick Holmes and Stefan Marsh.
Hi, everyone.
Good evening. How are we doing?
Living the dream as usual. And without further ado, we also have along today for the ride. I don't know why she decided to accept this invitation, because surely she has better things to do than to chat to this motley crew. It's Racing Mentors, Jess Shanahan. How are you doing, Jess?
Hey, I'm doing really good, thank you. I'm actually so jazzed to be on this show. It's like, you know, the most sports socializing that I haven't had this year.
talking with three other randomers about club racing.
Basically,
can't get any better than that. So, Steph, Nick, how have your previous weeks been since the last podcast?
Fantastic, Rob.
Yeah, got a bit of racing in, didn't you?
Good. We did. I, do you know what? It's quite funny you should say that, Rob. But just looking at our start sequence there, and the KA is going around paddock. We should just like frame that in the fact that, and show everybody from the weekend that it can be done. Unlike the weekend.
We've got to touch on it so early.
Well, I'm sure we'll cover it later, but I just while I remembered and saw the start sequence, it was just weird seeing cars going through paddock heel bend correctly.
Well, I'm sure we will touch on this later and we will put the world to rights, Nicola. So I know there were a few things you possibly were a little bit peeved with at the weekend, as were a lot of competitors around the paddock. Anyway, what we are going to do is look into the positive aspects of it. Boris decided to make an announcement during the weekend on Saturday, so that's kind of scuppered club racing, at least for November.
Yes.
The 750 Motor Club did make an announcement earlier on. They've managed to reschedule their meeting for December. I can't remember the exact dates, but
12th and 13th.
And effectively, it's their 2 one-day meetings they had left, isn't it? So they've put that into a weekend.
Yeah, I think they've compacted it all together so everybody can finish their seasons. And you're going to have to bring your winter warmers for that one. God, midway through December to finish a race season. Woo-hoo!
That's going to be horrid on the tyres. Can you imagine going out like -5, cold tyres, get them nice and warm, start to get some weaving in, and you just end up flying off onto the grass anyway because don't bother.
No, it's going to be good. It's good that they've managed to do it so late in the year. So.
But at least, I suppose, with the elite racing status, we've got the British Touring Cars, obviously, the finale is going to go ahead. British GT is going ahead at Silverstone this weekend with David Addison on the commentary. And the British Truck Racing is actually going ahead at Brands with a bit of a club racing support package. So there's still some racing going on.
It's pick and choose, isn't it? Pick and choose.
Yeah, exactly. So, but anyway, chaps, the reason I put this particular episode on today, before I go on to a bit of a sad but poignant point, but what we want to talk about today is not just the cost of club racing like we did in episode 3, but the kind of value you get out of it. We will come across to that shortly. I know I put a post up. There was a lot of interested people in that, so I am looking forward to talking about that with anyone today. Unfortunately, though, we do hit a bit of a sad but poignant point. Merrick Cox, who a lot of people would know, especially associated with the 2CVs, the C1 series. He was a stalwart in getting that up and running in the UK. Mission Motorsport trustee and chairman. He was an active board member with Gordon Murray Automotive. Unfortunately, tragically, on Sunday, we got the news through that he'd lost his battle with cancer that he'd been fighting for a few years. So everyone at Club Racing UK sends out their condolences to his family. And unfortunately, we've lost a good one there.
Bastard C word, isn't it?
Typical, isn't it? So, moving on from that, we actually go on to today's subject. As well as bringing Jess onto the show, it's kind of a bit of a podcast crossover, is it not, Jess?
It is a bit, yeah. I gave you guys a shout out on my podcast. Maybe you guys will have to, you know, come and join in the sponsorship chat one day.
I think we're going to have to jump on and Well, I would say bring the standards down, but you know, I'll let everyone else
bring it down a notch.
I don't know. This setup you guys have is so different to the way that I record the podcast, because you know, Toby and I just turn up, you know, to pre-record. We'll just chat for 45 minutes. Job's a good one. That's it. That's the podcast.
Well, no, still, you make...
That's what we do. We don't have scripts or anything.
Well, flashy video, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. the flashy videos and anything, it's only possible with the wonderful guys at My Supercar. Again, a big shout out to them. But more or less, it's the same. It's people passionate about the sport that we do and the sport that we love. We get together and we talk about it.
Exactly, yeah.
So, Jess, let's talk about yourself. Tell us about yourself, about Racing Mentor, about you, and sort of give people an idea of what you're about.
Yeah, of course. So I've been in motorsport for probably about 7-8 years now, and for a long time I was just kind of doing marketing for championships, for drivers, etc., alongside I run a marketing agency, so I was doing a lot of that, but I ended up running my own Porsche racing team in the Porsche Championship. Yeah. And during that time, we got tons of sponsorship. But because my background is marketing and sales, I kind of found it really easy. And I thought everyone found sponsorship that easy. I obviously came to my senses, realized that a lot of people struggle with it. And I kind of thought, well, I need to teach this to people, because I was hearing so many stories of talented drivers at all levels who just had to stop racing because they didn't have the budget to go any further. And that was, yeah, just so frustrating to me. So I created Racing Mentor as a, you know, a platform for offering content and tools to help people secure sponsorship and learn about, you know, the business skills needed in motorsport, as well as obviously all the on-track skills. So it just kind of grew from there. I started it, I think, the end of 2016. Maybe the end of 2017. And it just kind of, it started really small, just a load of blog content. And then I wrote a book in 2018 and it just kind of skyrocketed from there.
The book in question, Get Paid to Race, that literally, as you say, that skyrocketed. I know so many people with a copy of that book.
Yeah.
I have it.
Including the bearded wonder, Mr. Nick Holmes. So.
Wow. Can I still be the bearded wonder?
Yeah. Well, you've given it a little trim. I mean, it's
a lot of it off. I know, but you have a very small chin.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Leave my chin alone. At least you can see it now.
Anyway, back to the matter at hand. So, so the book, Jess. So that came out in 2018. So, roughly how many copies have you sold, and how much in terms of testimony?
So we've probably sold about 700 or 800 now, because I had to do a second print run, and my first print run was 500. But I think, you know, just from the drivers that I know about and the drivers that have been through like supporting content and courses after the book, I know of about £2 million worth of sponsorship that's been raised, which in 2 years, which is... It's partly baffling to me, but then partly it just makes complete sense. Just because the skills that I teach in the book are quite straightforward to follow once you've got that knowledge. And it's more then down to mindset and the work that you put in. But yeah, I'm super proud of everyone that's kind of read through the book and got results, you know, whether that's a six-figure result or a four-figure result or anything in between, where, you know, that's helped them get on track or stay on track or, you know, do more with a race car, win some races, whatever it might be. I'm just immensely proud to have been part of that journey for a lot of people now. So yeah, Racing Mentor started off as this small side hustle to help people, and it's just grown into something huge.
Fantastic. So awesome. I suppose with something like that, I mean, you've got the workshops as well. So you've got the 6 weeks to success, ultimate guide to racing PR and sort of putting yourself out there to sponsors and not just being the same old, hi, I've got a race car, I can put your sticker on it, give me some money and I can go racing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's Jess's favourite one, isn't it? I'll put a sticker on my car.
If you pay, we love stickers. Money.
We yeah, love stickers.
But for, everyone I loves think, stickers. Oh, don't get me wrong. I love a sticker and I love seeing my logo on race cars. But actually, in terms of value, and like, especially if you're a business who's, you know, going to be spending a lot of money, a sticker on a car isn't enough. But yeah. I think, you know, the way that most sports sponsorship used to be back in the day, actually a sticker on a car was valuable because we weren't all blind to advertising like we are now. So yeah. I understand why people think that is the right approach, just because no one's taught them that things have changed. And I guess that's kind of why I'm here.
Okay. So it's, I suppose what it's all about really is actually not you sort of going and doing the job for the driver. It's giving him the skills that can carry him on, not just in the short term to get himself, you know, if he wants to race in an MR2 championship or something, to go and maybe grab himself a small bunch of sponsors there to help him, but to build a relationship over time that could eventually see someone, I don't know, maybe turn up, progress from MR2s to Ginettas or anything, yeah, anything like that. And I would think a few of your success stories, one in particular, your co-host of the podcast, is Toby Trice. So obviously a lot of that has sort of, a lot of the backing he's got has come off of the work you've done with him.
Yeah, and you know, I see a lot of people who are kind of in Toby's position. When I first met Toby and he bought the book, I think it was at Autosport 2 years ago, he wasn't even racing. He was doing like, you know, karting at Buckmore, and you know, I think he'd tested one Ginetta, but he went through he was one of the first people to go through the 6 weeks to success course, and he just gets it. He's one of those people that he's now kind of learnt the basics, and although I work with him on an ongoing basis, he's very business minded, and he just needed kind of that nudge in the right direction to go, this is how you use that, you know, those natural entrepreneurial skills that you have to lean towards sponsorship. And it's very much, especially from Toby's point of view, about that relationship building. And he's got massive goals of, you know, like British GT, Le Mans, all of that kind of thing. And I've got no doubt that he'll get there, because he's got, you know, the things that are, obviously you need the understanding of business and sponsorship. But the things that I think are more important than that is good relationship building skills, and just the drive, pardon the pun, but like just so being so focused on your goals that you can put in the hard work to get to where you want to be.
Yeah. And I can't remember it was, it was a conversation a couple of weeks ago, but we're talking an old school driver raced in the 80s. And they were basically saying to me, sponsorship in effect hasn't changed, because in the 80s, you had a lot of people that were actively involved in sponsorship in motorsport. You had a bit of cigarette money around, but you still had to build up relationships with these people. Yeah. It wasn't just you would turn up at Phil Morris HQ and go, if you stick Marlboro on the car, can you get me into Formula 3 or stuff like that? It's still these drivers. It's about making yourself known and just getting yourself out there and, you know, putting yourself as, okay, it's not so much what you can do for me. What can I do for you as well?
Exactly that.
Yeah.
It's a relationship. The relationship isn't just one way. And a lot of people think it is, I would think. It's.
And I think this is. Yeah. And I think this is the reason that so many businesses try sponsorship and then say never again, because it, you know, a driver will promise loads of stuff and then just nothing will happen. They'll take the money, they'll go racing, they won't do what they promised. And I think, you know, part of what I'm trying to do is educate businesses as well on what to look for in a driver and, you know, how to get the most for your money and activate that sponsorship as well as, you know, on the driver side of things, on how to build those relationships and get that sponsorship money.
Exactly. And a lot of people watching tonight would obviously think as well, oh, you know, what's club racing really got to do with sponsorship? But if you look across every, where it's the BRSCC, BARC, MSV, 750 Motor Club, a vast majority of their series, it will be the Tegua Club Enduro. It will be any race series now has that sponsor on board, and you've got to build a relationship. So it's not sometimes just about the individual club racing driver as well. It's series that are doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
they're trying to be sustainable, and 99 times out of 100,
that
relationship works both ways, because there's normally something that's there for the competitors that are in that particular championship. But at the same time, by doing that, the competitors are doing something for the business. And I suppose it's also important that it works out for all parties there.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's often this misconception from drivers that if they're either working for a sponsor individually or they're in a championship that's sponsored, there is still work to be done there. And actually, you can really, you know, get extra kind of brownie points for working hard. And actually, I find this a lot with teams. If a driver is in a team and the team has a sponsor, the stuff that the driver can do for that team sponsor can really, really benefit them in the long run as well. And I think a lot of people kind of miss that. There's, you know, relationships to be built everywhere, and, you know, value that you can offer to sponsors everywhere as well.
Fantastic. Right, let's go to some comments now. Matt Clary is actually asking about the book, Jess. Would the book be good for a young driver coming up, i.e. kids?
Yes, so
I would say so.
Yeah,
I would assume he means sort of coming up through the karting ranks and then maybe going into cars.
Yeah, so there are a lot of like karting parents and junior parents who have read the book, but my style of writing is very kind of straightforward, to the point, simple. So I know lots of young drivers who are coming up through the ranks that have got their hands on the book, but just on the karting side of things, I also have a free karting ebook on blog.racingmentor.com. So if someone's like, oh, I'm not sure whether, you know, sponsorship is right for karting, I've got kind of the very basics kind of in that ebook as well.
Fantastic. Right, some more comments. So Joe Murray, he doesn't believe you, Nick. No KA makes it round paddock. It certainly seemed like that at the weekend.
Definitely.
China will cover that one. Have joined us as well. Evening, lads. Great result of the weekend. They did really well. Got the nighttime Dagenham dustbin. Paul Harvey.
And they beat us.
And they beat us, yeah.
Git.
Paul Harvey joins us. Vicky Pratt joins us. Great to see you at the weekend, Vicky. You're looking well. Chris Pratt, who also joined us at the weekend from All Square Chassis Wrap and Ride as well.
Yep.
Mega Sarah Hall.
Yeah, that was fantastic.
He's not looking as well, bless him. Jokes. Love you, Chris.
No, well, I suppose now with lockdown coming in, he's got a month off, so he's got to look forward to setting up Santa's sleigh for December. But
making sure that's all geared in the right
way. Yeah, making sure the sleigh's all geared, bit of towing at the back, make sure Rudolph's nose nice and shiny and all that. I think Christmas is less than 2 months away now.
Right, if do you not mention that word one more time?
Yay, Christmas!
No.
The next podcast, I'm putting a Christmas tree right there. Just to wind you up.
And joining us tonight, it's the Grinch.
No, yeah, I am.
Jess, good news. Stacey Dennis, think I need a copy of this book. So if Stacey would like to purchase a book, where can she go?
Hold on.
Oh, Nick's going to get his copy.
Get like a virtual trade. Good, like crotch shot there. Thanks, Nick.
Yeah.
Sorry. You're probably like this shot a bit more though.
That's better. Yeah.
That's the book you want to get, ladies and gentlemen. Buy it.
Yeah. So you can find it at shop.racingmentor.com. And I think it's out of stock on Amazon at the moment, and I'm struggling to restock it there because I'm running out of stock here. Shop.racingmentor.com is the best place to get hold of it. But if anyone is struggling to find the link, just find @racingmentor on any social channel and I'll send you the details.
Fantastic. Mario Niufitu, who is also quite a regular on the show. Good evening, Mario. He comments, him or her, Rob, don't be sexist. Oh, yes, I did say him when I was describing. Yeah, I make that mistake, male or female, any driver. Absolutely, go for it.
I was waiting for that.
He also comments, Toby Trice is a legend. Great working with him at SVG Motorsport. Yes, Andy Johnson and the crew are the guys that look after Toby and the Genettas, isn't it? It's a great bunch of guys there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jamie Moore, good evening, Jamie. Fantastic result for you guys at the weekend with the Octane Junkies winning and winning the Super Cup in the, I think it was Nick Jackson and Ollie Pidgley, but we'll come across to that later. Frank Frostick, good evening, lads and lasses. Good evening, Frank. And Chris Pratt, Santa is too fat for me to corner weight the sleigh properly.
Whoa. Surely you can offset it with his reindeer.
Jesus, I've got no chance then. Right.
What are you on about? I thought you were Santa.
Anyway. Right. The one thing I do want to talk to you about, Jess, because I do remember you running this team, a pair of really sexy purple 924s in a championship that I used to spanner in. I loved that team.
I loved it too. I still have such a soft spot for a 924. Running Turn 8 Racing, which is my team, was just one of the highlights of my career. And I'm still really sad that I only did it for a year. But the plus side is that I made that difficult decision to stop doing it, to stop running the team, to go start Racing Mentors. So I guess it's all kind of worked out. But yeah, what just gorgeous cars. And I keep thinking about just buying a road going one for myself. But I wish I'd kind of jumped on that bandwagon about 3 years ago when they were only about £1,000 or £2,000.
Yeah, now the value's going up, 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 up.
Yep, yep.
Yeah, just like Rob's Focus ST.
Not my God, oh, for God's sake, Nick. I did not say it was my card. It's a stamp. Get the. It's like with anything. A 924. It's the same with a Fiesta XR2. If you try and buy one now, they're about £1 million. A Sierra Cosworth, you need a lottery win. It's, you know. Anyway, he knows what I mean. So, Jess, tell us about the podcast as well. So that's 20 episodes onwards now.
Yeah, I don't know where this time has gone. I think Toby and I talked about doing a podcast a while back because I used to have a podcast. I used to have, you know, the Racing Mental podcast when I first kind of started things out. And I just made it really difficult for myself. Like I didn't, you know, get anyone on board to help me. I tried to, you know, start, host, edit, interview, everything on my own. And it just got too much. So I did about 5 episodes, which were, they were, you know, they were good. But I kind of had to give it up. So when Toby said, right, let's make it easy, let's just make it a conversation so I'm not having to interview people every week, it's just made it so much easier. So, yeah, we started the Racing Mentor sponsorship podcast about – so we recorded episode 23 today. So, yeah, it's been a really, you know, fun experience. And the feedback we're getting from people is great because I know that, you know, as much as I love writing books and articles – that's not everyone's preferred way of consuming information. Some people want to listen while they're doing other stuff. So the podcast kind of made sense. So yeah, we talk about everything from, you know, the really basic sponsorship stuff through to, you know, the details like having a newsletter or closing the deal, the things that you need to do before a, you know, before a meeting, all that kind of stuff. So we kind of really kind of, I guess, drill down into sponsorship and branding and marketing as a racing driver.
Oh, fantastic. And when you started Racing Mentor, I do remember standing with a very tall bearded Wanda and his immaculate Vauxhall Vectra Challenge car. With your logo.
Immaculate. Immaculate. You're a funny guy.
It was immaculate at the time. I bloody loved your car. Well, I still do. But same. it was an absolute, to put it bluntly, it was an absolute pissing wet Silverstone in March or April. Kicked in the back of my van to help Mr. Nick in his first race with the Classic 2 and Car Racing Club pre-03s. And that's where we spoke for the first time. So
it was.
Yeah. Well, that seems like a lifetime ago.
I know.
That feels like an age ago, doesn't it? Yeah. Like, that was a ridiculous weekend. Like, car wasn't ready, really. But I was determined to be there for that weekend. And that was fun. That was I'll never forget it because, like, I thought I'd rock up. I was nervous as hell anyway for my first ever race weekend. And then, I say, Jess and Nell was coming along with you as well, wasn't it? And then we had loads of other people coming as well. And then we literally unloaded the car, went to start it up, didn't start up. Now it is started up every single time for weeks on end before the race. Got it to Silverstone, didn't start. I was like, what is going on? And yeah, it's just a challenging weekend throughout, really. But
yeah, I think I rocked up, you know, kind of like middle of the morning, and I was like, hey, everyone, how's it going? I'm so excited to be here. And everyone's like, the car won't start. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay.
What's going on?
Nick actually did have a little bit of hair then, and he was busy pulling it out.
Yeah, that's why it's now gone.
There was like Jay and myself with our multimeters just testing stuff to try and get it started. It just turned out to be a faulty earth. Got it in, got it scrutinized. Nick got in the car and stuck it sideways at cops. It was great.
But that was the funniest bit about it was I'm the electrician and it was dodgy wiring.
No, Nick, the funniest bit about that season was when we turned up to Castle Coombe and what we had to do in the lunch break, but that might have to be a story for another podcast.
I think that's a story for a different podcast, Rob.
Fantastic. Moving swiftly on, but at the moment you're currently working with Club Racing UK ambassadors as well, as well as genuinely, you know, we spoke at Autosport Live when the world was normal in January. and the way you've got racing
so
mentor, yeah, and the well, it feels like it. But the way you've got racing mentor set up now is that you're still working and helping people with the workshops and everything that are set up. You know, bringing the business in for yourself while helping people, and it's all set up really stable for you, which is just great.
Yeah, and I got to that kind of stage. Like when I set it up, I thought, wow, this could be like, you know, my passive income side hustle and all that kind of stuff. And then I got more into it and was doing the coaching and stuff. And while I can be hands off in terms of, you know, the book and the templates and all of the products that I sell, I am in the community kind of every day answering questions and speaking to people. And I must get 10 plus messages every day across, you know, different social platforms of someone asking a question or just wanting to tell me about something that they did. And, you know, I run other businesses as well, but this is the one that, you know, gets me up in the morning and makes me go, right, let's go out and, you know, talk to some fascinating people, but also really talented people as well.
That's good.
Fantastic, which actually kind of draws me to long as to why I sort of chose today about talking about the Valley. Now, a couple of weeks ago, Jess, you put a post up on your sponsorship group. You have a good an open group on there that kind of invites everyone to come in and talk about what sort of sponsorships they're doing and how they're getting on with the meetings and stuff. But you put an intriguing question out there, which just put a light bulb in my head. There is a, you know, just sort of thinking there is an episode in that. We covered about the cost of racing. We covered that in episode 3, but we never really talked about the value to different people.
Yeah.
Because you kind of understand now that people kind of get a different value to racing. Mm-hmm. In terms, I mean, to you guys, I'll ask you now. I mean, Stefan, what do you look for in a race series in terms of value? Not necessarily in terms of the pound notes, but just in what you get out of it.
Seat time is one. A good grid of cars to race against. And then most of all, it's about being with your friends, isn't it? It's about the whole weekend, just being away, doing your mates, being able to go racing, have some fun, and just enjoying that whole weekend, that moment, you know? Yeah. That's where the value, I think, is. Obviously, the racing's a big part of it. I think everyone would be the same as they want good racing, big grids and all the rest of it. But, you know, the value's in enjoying that weekend with friends, family, etc. And trying not to empty your wallet as much as possible.
Yeah.
Nick Holmes, I asked the same question to you, sir. What do you look for?
Yeah, so I'm pretty much the same. So I want a nice, you know, a grid that I can be competitive on. Obviously, I've been in grids before where I haven't been competitive, so straight away that's shunned me away from it. But then, yeah, Steph pretty much hit the nail on the head for me as well. It's obviously cost-effective racing for someone like myself that is on such a budget. But yeah, for me, it's the people you spend it with. I still think that I can have just as much fun on the track or off the track. You know, when you've just done your qualifying session on a Saturday, and like this weekend, for instance, you know, we were with 48 KAs,
yeah.
You know, all roughly with what, 2 to 3 drivers each, you know, as an average. I know some teams had like 5 or so. So you had tons of people there that said the atmosphere on that Saturday night was just electric. You know, there was people fixing their cars, but there was people having a laugh, having a giggle, getting out the racing driver's excuse book as to why they qualified 21st. but it's exactly what Steph says. You know, it's not just about going racing for the weekend. For me, it's the whole thing, rocking up, seeing your friends, having a laugh. And yeah, trying not to empty your bank balance too much.
Jess, I mean, obviously with people that you work with, what do they see in terms of value? What do you most commonly come across?
So it really, really varies. So you have, you know, people who are the serious hobbyists who they don't necessarily want to make a career out of this. They just want to go and do their, you know, exciting, slightly expensive hobby and have fun with their friends. So that there is absolutely that kind of level of it. And I definitely think that like seat time, just being able to have your friends and family around you to like, I absolutely get that. And I think that's where I would go if I were to race. But I think for the drivers that I work with most often, they are looking for that plus how they can offer value to their sponsors, because typically they're thinking like, okay, club racing is where I'm going to spend like maybe 75% or 50% of my career. And then they might go on to something else, or they might just stay at like that high level of club racing. So obviously, that's very expensive. I would say all racing is expensive, even if you can find kind of like ones that are good value for money. But a lot of the time, they need help from sponsors, or they want to work with sponsors because, you know, they get excited by doing all that kind of marketing and stuff, and, you know, being the career racing driver. So they're looking for, you know, anything that can add value. So great hospitality. Working with the right team, I would say, is just as important as choosing the right championship, because if you get a good team who can help you sort out track days and, you know, give tours and talk people through the car and all that kind of stuff, is super valuable. But yeah, hospitality, the ability to do track days, sometimes TV coverage. I don't think TV coverage is necessarily as valuable as people think it is. Sometimes I think that a good online stream is more valuable. And I'm not saying that because my supercar, but my supercar. but I, you know, I think people are looking for that. Let's go out and have fun. Let's go race something exciting that looks good. There's a bit of kind of an aspirational element to, say, racing something like a Ginetta or, you know, a Porsche or something like that. But it's about, you know, what can create value for sponsors. That being said, I don't necessarily think that you need to be in a really, really high level series to provide high level sponsorship benefit, but maybe that's a whole other podcast, perhaps.
I don't know, really. I think it's, I mean, Nick would say as much as anyone, you could probably find some of the best drivers in terms of door-to-door combat than you would in the Toka package.
Totally agree.
I love the Porsche Carrera Cup, and you know some of the blue chip sponsors on there are probably paying upwards of 6 figures, let's be honest. But you would probably find more closer door-to-door racing in, say, something like the BMW Compact Cup or something similar than you would in something big that maybe, dare I say, that maybe requires a little bit more skill at the time. So... But I think certainly in terms of what you said about TV is not going to be as relevant now because everything's moved online. And we have covered this in another episode before. Live streaming for club motorsport is top notch. 100%. Because
back in the day, drivers would be like, hey, look, I'm on Motors TV. and it would be brilliant. But now, yeah,
you know, I'm on one device.
You can quite happily go, look, I'm on YouTube.
You know, I'm on here. I'm on my PC. I mean, how many posts do you guys see that they're watching one stream on one screen, they've got something else up on the telly, and they're watching something else on the phone? Exactly. And it's that, you know, club motorsport is getting that accessible now. And through people like, to big up Club Racing UK, but we're, trying to force it out there a lot. You know, the BRSCC, BARC, MSV, they will try and push it out there a bit more, certainly on an online aspect. So again, you can say to your sponsors, this is something we can provide to you. Or if your granny wants to watch your race and doesn't want to sit in, 5 degree temperatures, shivering her nuts off, she can watch it on the live stream instead. It's good for all worlds, I suppose.
Yeah. And I feel like because those online streams are infinitely more shareable than, a screenshot or a dodgy rip of Motorsport TV and Motors TV and all of that kind of thing. Like, I feel like you can say to the sponsors that you can activate this so easily by sharing this. And by talking about, this is the car that I'm sponsoring. There is my logo. And it just makes it so much easier. So I think a live stream is so, so valuable. And, the amount of sponsors I see sharing those rather than talking about, hey, I was on ITV4 for 20 seconds. It's the online coverage that you get excited about. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Look, there I am.
Here I go, vroom, straight up the straight, and that's it, gone.
I think I don't know if you saw, I can't quote the numbers now. I'm sure Ian can jump in and quote the numbers, but he put the post up earlier of his the figures from the Enduro KA from the weekend.
Oh, yeah, was that something like 30?
Look at that.
Yes, I can.
Go on, Ian. Go on, Ian. Quote the numbers.
Quote the numbers, actually. Yeah, 35,000. And Jessica, three more with you. Actually, live streaming is far better than TV.
There's a surprise.
Oh, there he is.
I should have put a Santa hat on, shouldn't I? Anyway, I'm off. Ciao, ciao.
Look at that. He's just in and out like.
Yeah.
In and out like that.
He's always watching.
I was going to say, with all the viewers he's got for the golf as well, he's more or less a local celebrity now. So he's got functions to go to. So he just sort of has to drop in and out every now and again.
That's it. That's why he can't ever stay around for an episode, because he's going to be doing some kind of live speech for someone.
Exactly.
Switching on some Christmas lights.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we're doing. He would be doing it in front of a crowd. It would just be him. They'll have to live stream it because obviously no one's allowed because of COVID. So my supercar will be bringing to you soon, probably switching on Pangborn's Christmas lights. And there's just Ian stood next to a Santa and the town mayor just flick.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I asked this question.
There you go. If anyone's listening and they want their Christmas lights turning on, give us a shout. We can put you in touch with Ian from my supercar.
He's back. That, chaps.
Might be coming sooner than you think. Watch out, Black.
Brilliant. Love it.
Love it. But I asked the question about value on the Club Racing UK Paddock Group, and I got quite a good feedback from everyone. So I really appreciate that. Thank you, guys. I'll come to some more comments, but I'll read some of the comments from this post. So Sam Pierce prefers a friendly paddock. Tony Hunter, who races Tricolor Trophy, he likes racing with friends, a friendly, relaxed paddock. Everybody prepared to muck in to get a fellow competitor out on circuit. Jess mentioned about serial hobbyists. He said it's a pastime hobby and a weekend away. Paul Harvey commented, time with mates, you make new friends, the amount of track time, better driving standards and no contact also provides better value for me. Would love to have a series televised. Mike Bland as well, competitive grids with a friendly paddock. And those five there are all with completely different series. So you can obviously get that, a lot of that wherever you go. So Neil Ashcroft, who actually joins us, he has commented, good evening, Neil. Value to me is multifaceted. A competitive field that I believe I can compete with for an outright win with the budget that I have. Friendly, supportive, trustworthy drivers I'm as happy to lose to as beat. And it makes him feel like a racing driver. Mm-hmm. This includes live streaming and a well-backed organisation or club and no politics within the club.
Great answer. That's
yeah.
It,
bang
yeah.
on. Yeah.
I could agree with that. Callum McDougall,
I mean, no. Yeah. No, I was going to say, politics in motorsport.
Never.
Politics in motorsport, never.
See, I thought that when I first started doing motorsport, and about three race weekends in, I knew what it was all about. I don't know about you guys.
Can't believe it took you that long.
I know.
Three race weekends, blimey, Rob.
To be fair, I drive a Ford Focus, so I was normally head under the bonnet trying to fix the bloody thing. So Callum McDougall, I agree with all of the above. He wants a good, hard, competitive race where he's pushed all the way to do the absolute best job he can, but not to win at the expense of someone else's race car. Obviously, the bad side of sponsorship, you don't want to be on someone's car when, say, they go spearing into another car and it goes viral.
Yeah, absolutely.
The friendly atmosphere in the paddock is a priority for me as well. Racing is my hobby and we all have good and bad races, but going away for the weekend, spending time with everyone is what it's all about. So you've got a guy there that has it as a hobby, but he also works in the industry with HRX, which is quite interesting. I could go through all these. We also had a chap trying to sell his Cobra from South Africa, but I think he's buggered off now.
Is he back on there again?
No, I keep seeing that post.
He
commented on that post, and I was just sort of like, okay, there's no value in that Cobra. It's in South Africa for start. It cost me a bloody fortune in shipping.
I think I'm going to have to remove him because he keeps trying to sell that thing. Bless him.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm going to pay for the shipping from South Africa, it's probably not going to be that difficult to get something from Australia, and I prefer a V8 supercar for the money he's asking. So, you know, that's all I'm saying. Let's get back to some comments. So, go Bobby UK.
Hey, just think, Rob, when that ST170 appreciates as much as you think it's going to, you'll be able to afford the shipping from a V8 touring car in Australia.
It's going to be $100,000. Oh, we've lost Steph. Bye, Steph.
He's gone for a wee.
He's gone for a wee. That's exactly what it is. I didn't say it was going to be hundreds of thousands, but, and you can check now, there have been articles about this in the likes of Autocar magazine, but the ST170 is seen as a future classic. Moving on. back to the comments.
Moving on, done. Carry on with the comments.
We'll carry on with the comments. So, Joe Crutterton is watching this evening. Good evening. Mario. Now, Nick, I think Mario's getting the old fishing reel out. House wiring is easy peasy. You only have three wires to cope with. Cars have thousands of wires, therefore experts only.
Yeah. I can't even deal. To be fair, I don't deal with house wiring either. That stuff does me nothing. I'll stick with roller coasters. I'm all right with that.
He also makes a good point as well. He says, if your nan is freezing her nuts off, she's your granddad.
That's a fair point too. He's on it tonight. He's definitely on it tonight.
Fair play, Mario. That's quite good. Joe Crutterton, he is like the genie from Aladdin. Ah, he must be on about your chin, Nick.
Who, me?
Yeah. He's on about someone being the genie from Aladdin.
Definitely no genie.
No, he's definitely no genie. He's probably tried to rub a few magic lamps in his time, but we'll move on from that. Jonathan Atkinson also... Mario also says, when I join a race club, I look for a big barbecue. Damn right.
Yes.
How do we forget the barbecue? That's the Saturday night race weekend.
Well, that was that said that that I think it was the weekend I first properly met you, Rob. Actually, when you were with the classic touring cars in the pre-05, they had that massive barbecue in the Silverstone. Garages, putting burgers on for everyone. I mean, that was obviously pre-COVID for the people that, you know, back in the day when we used to be able to socialise.
That was years ago.
But we were all in the garages, all with a burger, all with drinks. It was a right laugh, and
just, you know, talking before.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
And they were still racing to follow on the Sunday. That's yeah. Like I say, I prefer the Saturday or the socialising as much as I like the racing as well. But
yeah, we used to have some good time.
I always have people ask me, you know, they say, you know, if there's no fancy hospitality at my race weekend, what do I do for my sponsors? I'm like, is there a barbecue? Because I think the environment and the camaraderie of a barbecue is just as fun as fancy hospitality, as long as you've got, you know, the right kind of sponsor.
Exactly that.
Yeah. Because I bet you, especially at a club racing barbecue, if you show them around, they'll be, oh, that guy's got this car. Oh, yeah, I'll come and show you. Come and have a look at this or something like that. It could especially something like, imagine, Nick, you've got the classic touring car racing club, someone that used to have an old Triumph or something like that. Oh, they've got some over there.
Yeah. We'll take,
and the sponsor could have a wicked day out, maybe bring the family along to have a look as well, and then come away from that. Yeah, I like that. That's pretty cool.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't want to deject from a barbecue because I really fancy a barbecue right now. Thank you, everyone. But even just this weekend, I know obviously COVID and stuff like that. We had loads of drinks and stuff on our tables and some crisps and it's not a fancy barbecue, but we still had people popping. Ian from and his team from My Supercar were popping in and enjoying our hospitality for a little bit. But it was it was still even just stuff like that. Yes, it's not a fancy bloody, I don't know, 3-course meal in a huge truck or anything or what have you, but
yeah, you
can put on any kind of spread.
Yeah, and
warm cocktail, crisps, and a pack of energy drinks.
Solid.
We've got that covered.
I'd go for a warm glass of water. Like, it's been that long since I've been to a racetrack and seen, you know, any racing drivers or motorsport folk that I'll just, you know, I'll come along and stand in the rain and be quite happy and not be fed. That's where I'm at now.
just take me to racing, please.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, one of my best memories was at Brands Hatch. This was when I was spannering with the Porsche Championship. And it was a well-known GT team. A lot of the guys out there will remember him from British GT days, Brookspeed. They had a couple of drivers, and they put on a massive hog roast for the whole paddock. And I was just a little college student. But basically, the matter of fact is, myself and the other guy that I was with and the Brookspeed mechanics got terrifically drunk. We're trying to do wheelies with a moped around the paddock, bearing in mind this is over 10 years ago now. And you know them big foam crash barrier things that the bike boys use when they put them out when the bikes are out. We were trying to run and jump into one of those, but sort of pile them up. But anyway, the camaraderie from that, there was literally about 100 of us stood in the middle of this paddock with this massive hog roast out that these guys had laid on. And that was probably one of the best nights I've ever had at a racetrack apart from racing.
Yeah.
And you remember those times?
Yeah, so yeah, I'm exactly. With you on this, because I've been to some really, really fancy like hospitality parties. Like I did some work in MotoGP, and it was like all you can eat gorgeous Italian buffet food. But that is not as memorable to me as, you know, one of the 750 Motor Club end of season parties I went to.
Yeah. There we go. Jonathan Atkinson comments as well. Keep missing these barbecues. The downside of racing on Saturdays in road sports and living in Scotland. Oh, crikey. Well, to be fair, he's probably missing out on as much lockdown as we are at the moment. So maybe stay up there for the winter, John, then pop down in the spring. Neil Ashcroft has actually come off subject a bit, but this is quite a key question. All of you guys, what do you think club racing will look like in 5 years' time? We'll start with Jess.
Well, that's a good question. So, I think it will look... I don't know. Like, I think because things are costing more. So I think unless something changes or people get richer, like I think we were seeing grids start to dwindle, and I feel like they've bounced back a bit. But I wonder if this whole kind of COVID situation has kind of, you know, done a number on some people where they're going to think this is not right for me. This is too expensive. You know, maybe the grids might dwindle more. But, you know, I wonder if, you know, 5, maybe 10 years time, we're going to be seeing more electric club racing, which I think is kind of exciting.
Okay. Stefan?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry, Nick.
No. He's about to say something and he's given up.
I think his line has freezed. Yeah. Okay, Stefan, so where do you think club racing will be in 5 years' time?
No, I kind of agree with Jess with the on the money side of things and everything getting more expensive and everything like that. I don't see it being much different in 5 years. Maybe 10 years with the more electric kind of style stuff, but I think club racing wise, electric racing will be mega, mega money. Trying to keep that operational would be a lot of money. So I don't think it'd be much different, but I do think, as we're already seeing, that the more affordable racing, you know, the low budget seat time, like the KAs, the C1s, etc., will play a bigger part because everyone's after that kind of bang for buck, aren't they? But again, you still got the rest of them that are still going strong. It's just hoping it's not diluted too much, and then hopefully it will continue going as it is, I think. But that's, anyway.
Okay, Nick Holmes.
Can you hear?
Oh no, Nick's struggling tonight. So carry on, Jess.
I was going to say, I think what would be, you know, we don't want to lose the fact that, you know, we've got really, really affordable kind of endurance racing at kind of one end that gets you tons of seat time for your money. And then obviously you've then got the more elite levels, the top end of club racing and beyond. But you don't want to lose that stuff in the middle that has its own kind of charm and excitement as well. And I think that, you know, just seeing things like the C1s, like the KAs, seeing how well-loved they are, we could see more of those coming in and more people going to those. But then what happens to the things in the middle, like, you know, Fiesta Championship, you know, Honda Cup and all of that kind of thing? What happens to those things in the middle? You know, because obviously people with lots of money are always going to have lots of money to go racing at that high end. But I think it's that middle space that maybe is going to change more than the rest of it.
I think, I hope as the KAs and C1s is going to either be a step up for people, so it can be their early entry to learn server speed, etc. And once they've done it, it's the same with us. You know, we've got involved in the KA and now we're pushing into... We've gone and got the Mini, and we want to push on. Obviously, we're still going to do the K, but we want to push on and try something a bit faster and a bit more, you know, exciting, etc. But it's also the fact of the KAs, etc. It's that point where you can go racing with your mates for hours on end, you know. When you go to, you know, go race your MX5, etc., it's generally you and your team, and then... When you go racing the C1s and stuff, you're taking all your friends for a good weekend to go racing together, sharing that experience. So, yeah, I hope it's the same thing, you know. I think it needs it all the way through from lower end to high end, really.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Joe Cratterton kind of makes a point as well. Do you guys not think there are too many championships all fighting for the same drivers, therefore diluting grids in some series? Yeah, and we have discussed that before. I think Nick and Stefan, you kind of agree as well, don't you? And the big problem there, I don't know if Brexit will affect it, is effectively tomorrow morning, Stefan and Nick can go and start their own championship. So Stefan's going to go start his own championship. That's going to be called the Stefan Cup for BMW compact cars. And he's going to do it with Bark. And Nick will turn around and go, well, I'm going to start my own championship for MX5s. And I'm going to go with the Classic and Modern Motorsport Club. And technically, no one can stop him. He can go and do that because of the laws in place. If the MSA don't give him a permit or Motorsport UK. Go ahead, Nick.
I should just say, we definitely need more MX5 championships if we're going to build them.
Oh,
If I'm going to... Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, there's always... But you know what I mean? I mean, no one can actually physically...
Yeah, no.
From going and start now, and it's to do with the... some sort of European court that's involved that can step in and go, no, that's not fair. You need to grant them championship or give them a permit. Yeah. Maybe that will stop with Brexit. I don't know. It's stuff that's way above my thinking. and I'm probably going to open.
As you say, we've covered this before, haven't we? I think the problem is, I think everyone needs, again, if this was the case, I should be a politician, but I think everyone needs to take their own personal agendas out at some point, and some championships need to hold up their hands and go, do you know what? This isn't working for us. And
yeah. Stop. And to be honest, I know we've seen this year there are some grids struggling. We do have COVID. I know that's going on, but there are some grids struggling out there that were struggling before any of this COVID crap happened.
Yeah.
So sometimes
like,
you do.
Like to say though, we've covered this, haven't we? It's
yeah. So with that, we will move on. And we have got moving on from the main topic now. So we thank you for the discussion with that, Jess. But I know Jess is going to be really excited because Club Racing UK have got some seriously sexy competitions going on right now. Starting
we have.
If you really want that lockdown look when you go around in Asda shopping for your essential items and being banned from buying clothes, you can buy at £6.99 a Club Racing UK mask.
Yes, you can.
Right. Oh God, Steph, go on, model it. Please tell me you've got one.
It's nice little cellophane, you know, protective packaging to make sure that no one's putting any germs onto it before it gets to you.
Oh, okay. Look at that!
Exactly.
Oh, right there.
Yeah.
Also in competitions at the moment, Road Track and Race Parts. George Smee, he's got £100 voucher. I noticed it's gone up in value, gentlemen.
I was talking to him and then we were coming up with the idea and then we released it in the last podcast. And the moment I released it, he then messaged me and said, no, stick another 50 on there. So we've got up to 100. So mega thanks to him. That will end in 2 weeks. On the next podcast, we'll announce a winner in 2 weeks.
Yes.
Exactly. Fantastic. And finally, we've got the big, super-duper, absolutely bloody awesome £300 towards your first entry fee in 2021 competition.
That's it.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep. Club Making motorsport cheap. Making motorsport cheaper.
Doing what we can to support the club racer.
Exactly. And a competition that will definitely hot up in December when it's -5 and you go out on slicks. It's the Club Racing UK Save of the Year, judged by none other than Formula One commentator Matt. Oh, Ben Edwards, not Murray Walker.
Yeah, nearly. Well, to be fair, it's by the sounds of it, we've locked down. We've literally got the 750s final weekend in December. Maybe if there's any other clubs rearranging dates past, but
I think gents MSV have managed to move a couple of dates for Donington.
Oh, that'd be all right. So we haven't really got a date for when we're going to announce that yet. We're going to wait until all the championships and series are finished for that one, but we got some great entries. I think we got like 30 entries already so far. For anyone who has got a scary or have had a scary moment or a brown trouser moment, feel free to make sure you can send it to us if you want. If not, we've got a post pinned at the top of the our group, the paddock. Just get it in there because everyone's looking at them, everyone's liking them, sharing them, and there's some some very scary moments in there. Unfortunately, there is only going to be one winner, but you're all winners in my book. Let's say that much.
All good brown trouser moments in Nick's book.
There is some great. I say they're great. They're entertaining because you know they're saves. They've not ended badly, but there is some absolute shockers in there.
And again, that's what it's all about. Just quickly with some comments, guys, before we go to the news and the racing roundup. Joe Craddington's come back. He said, do you guys not think there's too many championships all fighting for the same drivers and therefore diluting the grid? Yeah. And he's put as well. It's almost like someone gets a hump with a championship they're running in and decides to set up their own to exactly the same spec and rules, but with a different weekend. Yep. Seen it quite a lot.
That's it. Keep happening. That is what it is. Yeah. I can't win this championship. I'll go make my own.
Yeah, there's a bit of that going on. Lee Moore has said as well. Sorry, Nick, I'll come back to your point in a sec, mate. Don't worry. Lee Moore has come back and said, suspect that in 5 years it will not be much different, but make it 15 to 20, we will see more electric, but will it have the draw? If you're talking current, yes. If you're talking attraction, no.
Robert Lewis.
Oh, yeah. See, that was an electrician's joke there. Can you see?
I'm here for the puns.
There we go. I'm here all week. So go back to your point, Nick. Sorry, mate.
No, it's fine. No, actually, I quite like that point, actually, about, you know, 10, 15 years' time about the electric cars and things like that. I think the problem, what we're going to have, I say the problem, right now you've got the old stalwarts of the sport. I mean, even myself in my 30s and stuff like that, I like seeing the classic cars, the touring cars, things like that. As we progress nowadays, like my kids, for instance, are going to be growing up with electric cars. So they're going to, when they're my age, they're the cars that they are going to have grown up with. So
hopefully
they like racing, but would be the cars that they can associate themselves with.
So. The only thing I will say, Roland Dane made this point, and I thought, that's bloody awesome. But he made the point that we used to use horses to get around, and they used to, you know, they used to pull canal boats. They used to be our mode of transport. They used to pull chariots and stuff like that. Now they're something that we use as a hobby. They're a luxury. They're beautiful animals.
They're a luxury, aren't they, Steph?
Yeah, that well, kind of a luxury. I think Stefan's other half's got about 15 million of them, is she not? But you know, it's something that's used for enjoyment, isn't it? So it kind of, the thing could happen now with internal combustion cars, in that they will still stick around. There will still be parts made for them and stuff like that. And it will be, you will have the electric cars on the road and in the elite motorsport. And then you'll still have the internal combustion stuff for club racing, and it will still, you know, obviously the environmentalists will at some point have a say, but
the eco warriors will ruin that eventually.
I'll be honest, I don't think they'll go after club racing as much. It'll be the elite stuff.
I think it's your hobbyists and your passionate, you know, the passion and the all of that will keep.
Exactly.
You know, classic cars or any kind of car, hopefully.
Yeah.
Going.
There we go. So we've got a bit of a brief racing roundup and a brief news roundup as well. We had a lot of stuff to go through, but now we're going into a lockdown. I've got a couple of scripts on the go. We're kind of going to round up a lot of the championship season. So if you don't get mentioned this week, don't worry about it. We haven't forgot about you. I'm just going to write about different championships in a bit more detail and get some more guests on. So the first bit of news coming through that I actually missed from the last podcast, Porsche Club GB, that was a bit of an underdog sort of on its own. They've moved to MSVR for 2021. That's another championship that's gone there. Again, something's got to be going right for them.
Well, as you say, we are testament to seeing how good the MSVR run their championships, and the Porsche Club GB have obviously seen it themselves as well, so that'd be a good one.
Exactly. Did any of you guys get to watch the Birkett relay at all?
No.
Some of it.
Yeah, some of the live
streams.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good. Raw Motorsport won the handicap in their Radicals. They won the scratch race. The three Amigos won the handicap race, and they were the first of the all BMW teams as well. So there was some great cars in there as usual. It was good fun to watch. And if you can, pop on mute.
It's one we've got to do next year, boys. Let's do
it. We'll make a club racing UK team. So if anyone wants to enter with us, give us a shout.
No worries. I think at this rate, there'll probably be two or three club racing UK teams. I think there's so much interest in it. It's massive.
Here comes the coffee.
Here comes the coffee. It's all right. Emma's just next to me. She's doing some work, actually, today. I'm technically in her office, so just waiting for the internet to be set up at my new... Well, I'm waiting for the internet to be set up at my new house. That's coming next Wednesday, so...
I've moved to
I'm still waiting for mine.
Who have you gone with?
I'm on Plusnet, but so the story was, as I signed up for Plusnet, they tried taking the phone line for the chip shop downstairs out, which is obviously a big no-no. They sent me the router. I plugged it all in thinking, well, because the BT man's come round and he's got my BT line. So I was like, oh, brilliant. I'll plug my router in. Nothing. Called up Plusnet and they're like, oh, no, we cancelled your order. And I was like, no, I still want the internet. Just you fixed it. But I've now got to wait another bloody 2 weeks.
Are you still stealing your neighbours?
Yes, I'm now stealing my neighbour's internet. Hence why I keep going funny every now and again. I'll have to knock on her door and tell her to move a router for me.
And she'll probably tell you to sort your own internet out, you sponging old anyway.
Yeah.
So the British F3 concluded at Donington as well. Absolutely horrible weather. Rivers running across the track. The Radical and the Clubmans ended up having cancelled races as well. They just, I think, obviously, low-profile prototype on those rivers, it just would have been carnage. But the Track Attack had a huge grid. I think it was like 35 to 40 cars as well. So well done, guys. It's great to see.
Yeah, mega.
The Bark at Thruxton as well. Hybrid Tune won the 45-car C1 endurance race. I watched a few clips of that online as well. It was good to see the C1s at Thruxton, actually. That would be a race to... Because you guys take it to the limit in the KAs as well anyway. Any time round Thruxton is just like...
I would love to take the KA around Thruxton.
That would be flat all the way around, but poo would be coming out while you're doing it.
Church would be flat out, wouldn't it? 75 mile an hour.
I mean, Church Corner's one of those. You used to watch the old Super Tourers and it would just be a dab of brakes. And you remember they'd have the little camera in the curb as they come over and you just hear the rasp as they come out. Just like angry wasps. It's great. Castle Coombe hosted the CSCC. I was going to say the Castle Coombe Racing Club then, but they've already finished their season. Tom Mensley won on a 36-car Tin Tops field. It was more like swimming than racing. It was very wet. And we should somewhere have a video clip for you. Have you got it, Elaine? Check that out for a three-speed two-spin. That was sick.
That was mega. That's actually one of our Saves of the Year entrants, actually, isn't it, that one?
That came, I think it was, was it Pescara put that up on the paddock page? And yeah. I thought, I've got to put that in the podcast next week.
Yeah, definitely. That was a brilliant little bit of driving, that.
Exactly. The CSCC, they rounded their season off at Mallory the weekend just gone. I haven't covered any of the results from that. I haven't had a chance to properly look through them, but we will be looking further into the CSCC sort of towards the new year. I'm going to speak to a couple of people and see if we can get them on the show as well for a CSCC special. Moving on to Brands Hatch, the Formula Ford Festival was on. I watched a bit of the live stream from that. Again, I still say now, we spoke about it on the Castle Coombe episode, Formula Ford is better than Formula Four. It is just the ultimate single-seater learning curve.
I think it's better than Formula One.
You're not wrong there.
I'm with you there as well.
Thank you.
Well, that's the thing, right? I don't know if a lot of people... So Rory Smith won. Absolutely fantastic final to watch. Very, very close racing. There is actually a special plaque. I know a lot of the people will sort of be a bit geeky like me and know some of the previous winners of the Formula Ford Festival. But I sort of had a look through, because it's going to be 50 years next year. And you look through some of the drivers that have won that and what they've gone on to do. So I'll start with Nick Tandy. He's won Le Mans.
We know him.
We know him. The ultimate
shared win a podium with him.
Yeah, he shared a podium with him, because I think his ultimate success after winning Le Mans and Petit Le Mans for Porsche, he won the KA 500 last year with JTR. Duncan Tappy, Formula Renault champion and is now a paid Blank Pan Endurance Pro driver. Mm-hmm. Joey Foster as well, multiple champion in Formula Ford. Anthony Davidson, who went on to race in Formula One and was a Toyota Works driver. Jenson Button. Mark Webber, who's not bad for a number two driver. Russell Ingall came over from Australia. 2005 V8 Supercar champion, two-time Bathurst winner. He won it. Jan Magnussen, Eddie Irvine, Roland Ratzenberger, you know, the forgotten man of Imola, but again, he won it. Johnny Herbert, Julian Bailey, Tommy Byrne, IndyCar champion Joseph Newgarden, and T-Bone Man himself, Rory Butcher.
Oh, T-Bone Man.
No, to be, I mean, have you guys seen the clip of that? I think there was a few fans that were a bit bloody harsh on him after that. He couldn't do anything.
Wow. He got penalty points for that, didn't he? Well, he got penalised for it.
He got 2 points and a reprimand, which I think was okay. You were maybe rubbing a bit close, but
yeah, but he was a passenger for the accident, wasn't he? So it's not really.
Yeah, you get on the grass. It's not as if you could sort of pull the handbrake Fast and Furious style and just wave goodbye, pull along.
Control Alt Delete and miss the crash.
Yeah, and the problem, unfortunately, you do get a lot of armchair bandits, don't you? They've never been on track in their lives, but they're experts.
Says us lot all sat here like this.
Yeah, pretty much. So with that, the second round, we move on. Okay, we're going to be a bit biased here because we were at Brands Hatch, and as well as the KAs, we watched some fantastic racing throughout the weekend. And I want to talk to you guys about Sam Pearce, because he spent a bit of time in our garage. I spoke to him. There he is, a couple of shiny trophies for him. So he turns up in that Honda Civic. He didn't win on the road, but Alex Tate, who he was driving with, was down as a guest. His car hadn't been dynoed by the series organisers, so they entered as guest class. So Sam won the track day championship race, and I think they finished. They took a class win in track day trophy. Not overall, they had a good battle with Rowan Lundy in the Toyota Celica. And it was just some fantastic racing. So well done, Sam. That was fantastic.
Yeah,
in that car.
That's what I was impressed about, because he's. I didn't actually realise that he's always been. He's like our Jay equivalent, isn't he? Old Justin. He's always there. He's running cars. He's building cars, and he does it very well. But speaking to Paul and the team, saying how they've been trying to push him for years. It's come on, get racing, go. And eventually they just took it out of his hands, paid for him to get his ARDS test, got him there. And then for it to see him, let's be honest, he absolutely bloody stormed it.
Yeah, he did.
I was mightily impressed with his drive.
Yeah, and I got to know Sam at the beginning of the year purely because lockdown hit, I bought a sim rig and he advertised, you know, I'm going to do a Project Cars 2 thing, which we've mentioned on previous podcasts. And that's how I've kind of got to know Sam and the GNM folks around him. Wonderful people. And it was really good to
really
see a
good
guy.
Bunch.
Really good bunch. He was nervous. It was his first race. He turned up and absolutely stormed it. And the smile on his face that I could kind of see from behind the mask.
Yeah.
Kind of says it all. So well done, Sam Pearce. That was a great result for you guys. Again, capacity grids with the track day trophy and the track day championship. We will come down to Super Cup shortly. But I want to just start. Elaine has done a lovely little video for Enduro KA as a preview for the documentary that My Supercar released. So if you've got it, Elaine, pop it on.
What compelled you to do EnduroCar? Because you've been in it ever since from day one, you guys. I mean, what was the sort of thinking, looking at it, going, yeah, we've got to do this?
Well, it was Cole's idea, really. He sort of put it to us and went, we'll have to have a go at this. Obviously, he's raced cars for years in autographs.
Yeah.
He's in love with the cars. He knows them inside out. And just, yeah.
It's just been the most crazily exceptional race week. Last night was madness. this morning was...
We are live. We might not want to tell everybody that.
Well, yeah, it wasn't far from
party last night.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it might be time for a little trot down to the garages, shall we? It's not quite gone to plan for this one. Look at Jamie Moore. Stop go penalty for the leaders. This will put you in first. But it's all changed. This is just proof that you do not ever give up in endurance racing. Don't ever, ever, ever give up.
Bloody mad weekend that was.
That was awesome. And again, great video there by the My Supercar guys, in particular Elaine, who's put that together. So if you do get a chance, go to My Supercar Facebook page, and it's on the Club Racing UK page somewhere as well. And just take 15 minutes of your time and watch that documentary, because I think, Nick, we make an appearance in there at some point. You get interviewed.
I do. I got
as always.
As always. But there is one thing to point out there, chaps. How good did Ian look in that Club Racing UK mask?
$6.99.
Yeah, remember that. $6.99. And I mean, Club Racing does have its heroes. And with that, I want to tell you about the Piston Heads team.
Oh, now, God, yes. Give me a sec.
Okay, Nick's going to be back, but I want to tell you about Piston Heads. Loveliest guys ever, Ollie Lewis and the guys. Went out to qualify. Unfortunately, ended up in the paddock gravel. That was the car before. So got beached in the gravel. Unfortunately, another car on the red flag lost the back end and went into the Piston Heads car. So that's after the accident. Didn't look like they were going to sort of get out at all. I know the other car involved didn't get to the race at all. Got a porta pat together. Graves Motorsport gave them a couple of doors. Lawrence Davey Racing got a porta pack out, and they pushed it all out. And these guys went and stuck it on the podium. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And that is what Club Racing's all about. Everyone coming across and helping out. Absolutely fantastic.
Definitely.
Exactly. Oh, Nick's still missing. If anyone's watching, have a look at the nice picture in Nick's room there. That was his first race, you know.
No, it was a crazy, crazy weekend.
It was. I mean, how did you find it, Stefan?
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective of our team, qualifying didn't go too well for us. Just trying to get a very busy circuit of 48 KAs flying around. Obviously, conditions were tricky. So there's a lot of stoppages, and we just didn't manage to get a lap together to really get us up the grid where we should have been. So we started 21st. Matt went out first, did a great first stint, kept it nice and clean. Again, as everyone knows, there was a few incidences, a few safety cars. Kept it clean, kept it circulating.
Just a bit.
I jumped in. We got the second. We were chasing down the lead. And then we had a brake failure, which ultimately we had to come in to sort out, which put us a few laps down. And then we were chasing for the rest of the race, really, trying to see how far we could get up, finishing 14th. And surviving, I think, was pretty good in the end.
Yeah, unfortunately, but I think because of the conditions, there was a few battered and bruised KAs coming back. And look, I mean, a lot of people would say, oh, yeah, it's people pissing around and not driving properly because it's KAs. No one gives a damn, they'll smash them up. But it was at times genuinely tricky, and it was survival. You've got 48 KAs on a very compact grid on a very small circuit. So it's going to happen. But again, Chris Pratt has said it as well. Piston heads, absolute legends. Nick, while you were gone, we were just showing the audience the before, after.
Yes, the before and after.
On Piston heads, great result from those guys.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the fact that those car, you know, that car was rolled over on top of within 1:58 of the qualifying session, and it was you've shown the pictures. It was battered, not quite as battered as the other car that rolled on top of it. That was a complete write-off, bless it. But yeah, for those guys and everyone who got involved to help get that car back out, that was a massive round of applause for those. Really, I think it was. But again, you know, you're talking about values in what you want for a series. The fact that there was about 4 or 5 other teams all chipped in to get that car on track.
Yeah, exactly. I think
that says it all, really.
Adds value to it, the camaraderie and stuff as well. So,
definitely.
For the next series,
went and bloody won it.
I know. And it was it was a drama last minute. It was Octane Junkies, and congratulations to Octane Junkies for the win. That was absolutely storming drive from them and the Morse Motors crew for looking after them. So well done, guys.
You should give a little bit of the backstory, though. The fact that they were leading.
Ad Smith. Yeah,
he threw it off, and they went about 3 laps down.
Yeah.
Barwell, you got to give a massive shout out to Barwell Motorsport, who were winning the race for most of the 8 hours. With about 10 minutes to go,
their car pulled off while leading, conked down. Yeah, yeah.
I found out
what happened there as well. They got a hole in the radiator. I spoke to Kester just after the race, and it was a hole in the radiator, flashing engine light, and the car just slowly died a slow death, unfortunately. So
this car died off.
But yeah, massive shout out.
It just shows, doesn't it? And then I was rooting for them, to be honest. And then Stubborn Motorsport were then leading, and then they got a stop go penalty with 1.5 minutes left to go. It was a ridiculous race. It was great.
It had everything. It was drama. I mean, we had the sex appeal as well, particularly in Garage 24. You know, the pit stops and how everything was going for people. The nighttime lights as well. Big shout out to Shine Automotive with the green monster.
Their car was amazing
for the night. That was awesome. Tango and Crash got the daytime with their sort of BMW art car copy with the paint.
Yeah,
paint coming up on the car. And all right, I think by then, because we all kind of realised this is probably going to be it for the year, it kind of felt a bit bittersweet, but it was sort of like, okay, we are quite lucky to be here and doing this after the way this year's go, so let's just go and enjoy it. And
definitely that.
We will do. I will probably do another roundup video with various bits of video clips, and I'll get some more video from you guys. I'll do another video of our sort of year, which is...
We should definitely do an end of year. Well, we should do like an end of year podcast, shouldn't we? Like get everybody to send in their footage.
Definitely.
We'll put Elaine and Leon to work and make a little montage video of 2020 or something like that.
Yeah, fantastic. We should just have a mega podcast and get as many guests on as we can just to tell us about their year, because screw COVID, man. It's just done a lot of badness, isn't it? So let's just talk about the positive.
Never heard of it.
Ah, exactly. Just moving on quickly, chaps. MSV Super Cup. We have an ambassador alert because Red Seal Racing were racing this weekend. Only 11 cars for the finale. I think Stuart Garland and the team, and he's paid tribute to everyone as well in this half season that we've had. All the championship organisers, just everyone behind the scenes, MSV track days, all the series people just trying to get stuff together and done with the extra COVID restrictions. He was really proud of what his team had come through, and I take my hat off to Stuart Garland and the team, everyone behind the scenes. I know with Super Cup, the grids have been a bit short this year, but he's working hard to get them back up and looking good again. But, you know, Enduro KA, Track Day Trophy and Championship, they have got massive grids, lots of happy race cars, so fair play to them.
Yeah, definitely.
But Red Seal Racing finished eighth overall, very, very slidey in the Tango BMW. We will have them back soon. And they took some video of us. So when they manage to fix the camera again after having our ugly mugs on there, I'm sure they'll put some footage up and you can see us being filmed for once.
Yeah, because we're not constantly being filmed, eh? Or on film or live videos or whatever.
Is this still
Sure, everyone's bored of seeing our faces by now.
I was going to say, I thought you were on about your OnlyFans account again, but you know. So with this, we pop across to the Bark meeting at Alton Park. We have another ambassador alert as well. Rick Walker was out in his Mini in the CNC heads. Qualifying was dry all morning. Lined up to qualify, and it absolutely pissed down. Had never been out in the rain before, so it was interesting. Got the car back safe and sound, 26 out of 36, which is bloody respectful in that particular championship.
In those conditions.
Very
good driver. And in that championship.
That championship, that driver, just perfect. Brilliant. Well done, Rick. Mm-hmm. Race one was still wet. Parts of the track still drying. Really, really tricky. Couldn't see bugger all going into the first corner. These are his words. Gained a couple of places, then a race restart for a shunt at the start. Eventually brought the car home in 21st and was really pleased. His first wet race, got it home in 21st. Good to be back safe. Fantastic results again. Race two was a dry race. Another red flag, but he managed to get past, having a good battle with Ian Bruce in his Civic. He's broken his gear linkage as well, which is quite common on those gearboxes. Lost a couple of places, but managed to bring it home 21st again. So, well done, Rick. We will have Rick back on the show as well. We're going to have another couple of ambassador specials, and we'll get them to tell them all about their seasons.
Yeah, sounds good.
Fantastic. The Hyundais were quite good value as well, and rather moist, as Wayne Rocket found out. And it's actually our profile picture. There we go.
It is. Look at that.
There we go.
I'm pretty sure I've not driven Mallory, but I'm pretty sure that is not where you need to be.
No, and it's not Mallory. It's not Mallory.
Oh, sorry, it wasn't Mallory either, no.
But, again, but
either way, yeah, that's not how you drive. That's not how you take that corner.
I would say that's the rallycross line.
Possibly. Bit of a Scandinavian flick there from old Wayne Rocket.
Yeah, previous double champion. Mark Dickon was actually crowned as the new champion in in his car, the 777 car. So congratulations to Mark Dickon as well. That's another series this year that has just grown and grown and grown. You went out in the car at the start of the year, Nick, before all the fun and games started. And
tell me about it.
It was you were really gutted you missed that, didn't you?
Oh, I was absolutely. I've been wanting to go in that series for God knows how long. Sodding COVID.
And I am fully aware we had a Bark meeting at Thruxton, a CSCC meeting at Mallory, and the BRSCC at Croft. We will cover those meetings in the next few episodes as we enter lockdown 2.0. Boris strikes back. we'll have some more reviews because we've managed to get some really good racing in so far this year, which has been brilliant, and there'll be lots more to talk about, I'm sure. I've certainly got the scripts ready to go, so we won't be disappearing just yet, chaps.
Good.
There we go. So I think with that, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. Any other business?
That's about it for this week.
Bang through some comments then quickly, Rob.
I think that pretty much.
I think we should, shouldn't we? So just before we end, I'll go through some comments. Joe Murray, as the season draws ever closer to a close, can I just get
Let's do some comments.
For anyone interested in getting more involved to look into marshalling, I started a few years back and you will not regret it. It's something that's on our to-do list, definitely, to do a couple of days.
The Orange Army.
Oh, so, hello. Yeah. Hello. I've just had a message.
Oh. No. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Hold on. Hold on, let's see if it. Oh. If you're still wanting to race a Hyundai, I'm going to build one over winter.
Oh. But
hey.
Is that from a Mr.
That's just someone messaging me, seeing if I'm interested in driving a Hyundai soon.
So again, if you have a certain champion,
watch this space.
Nick Holmes,
watch
is
this space.
Right, back to some last comments. Matt Cleary has asked, how much does it cost to race a KO for a weekend? I think Steph, Nick, you guys are the people to ask.
Depends what round you want to go with.
Well, elaborate then.
Vague, Steph. Come on.
No, it's not vague. I can't remember the actual cost for the
This weekend, the Indy 500 was £1,200 for 8 hours seat time.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you and Matt shared it two ways. I'm suddenly sloping
around. £1,500 probably, roughly.
Yeah, but by the time you bought tyres and fuel...
If it wasn't raining, we probably would have burnt through more tyres than we did this time.
Yeah.
But then,
how many tyres? Yeah. What do we buy? Six new tyres and only used two?
Three.
Yeah. Last year you bought about two tyres and burnt through about 20.
Yeah.
We used eight. We used eight tyres last year.
Yeah. I don't know. Probably.
Yeah. So what's that? £1,500. So what, you say 750 each?
Yeah, I'd say that.
For eight hours racing.
Yeah.
So split that. So 4 hours per driver plus qualifying. So 4.5 hours per driver, effectively, if you're running two-car team.
Yeah. And obviously, there was some five-car teams there. So even cheaper. So...
I mean, to be honest, the one award that was forgotten to give out at the end of the KA weekend was the Club Racing UK Driver of the Weekend. And we did actually award it to the JCB driver in Paddock Hill Bend. He did a fantastic job. Really well driven. He was precise, worked the winch well, got the cars recovered well. And
I
don't know. He did take some risks, though. He was pretty close to the racetrack with KAs coming around in the wet, still trying to keep up with the safety car. Still going sideways.
Yeah,
that was.
He was a brave man. He was brave.
The problem is, and I put this as blunt as possible, if a KA is going to go into the back of that JCB, do you really think the JCB driver is going to feel it?
No.
But I bet you the KA.
Oh, definitely.
So there we go. Matt Cleary has also said he's going to buy some merchandise. Thank you very much, Matt. It all goes towards back to the club races. So
okay, straight back into the club.
Exactly.
T-shirts will be available soon.
Yeah, but Joe Cretton has actually asked, what was Stubborn's penalty for in the end? I don't actually know. Do you guys know?
I don't know why they got the penalty. I can only assume being a stop-go was potentially track limits. There was a lot of track limit penalties going, but...
Yeah, to be a bit sceptic, we could say track limits. Yeah. I think it's because they weren't wearing a Club Racing UK mask, so we'll go with that. $6.99 if you're interested. So yeah, we'll stick with that.
Always a plug.
Always a plug. Jonathan Atkinson, massive respect to all in the Enduro KA paddock and to the Pistonheads team on their podium. Again, absolutely shared that as well. Robert Jarman, Tom Mensley won again at Mallory. I will try and cover that in the next couple of weeks. Do not worry about that. He's also said, someone's asked about how the Birkett handicap is calculated. So you'll like this answer. The same way they decide on a new Pope, some officials lock themselves in a room and we all wait for the smoke to come out of the chimney.
I think it's pretty much how they do it, isn't it?
Yeah. It's some sort of...
So someone tried to explain it to me a little while ago, and it's I'm not the best person to explain anything technical to, as we all know. I'm not going to go that much into it because I'm sure someone will give you a proper answer. But I know it's constantly evolving throughout the day. The idea being that it doesn't matter if you're in a Ford KA or a radical SR3, whatever, you're all technically meant to cross the finish line at the same time. So it doesn't matter what you're racing, you should. Yeah. The way that they constantly handicapping people. So you don't, I suppose, during the race, you don't really know where you are, I guess, until the end. But I'm sure there's people in there that would give you a more in-depth answer to that. But I want to do it.
Exactly. We've got a couple more comments, guys, just before we end the show. Harry Scott first. He says, guys, describe the start of the Indy 500 with one word.
Interesting.
Nick?
But it didn't really start straight away, did it? I mean, green flag.
And next question, please. Interesting. That's a good one. Exciting.
It started the same way qualifying did.
Well, with 8,000 red flags.
Yeah, it was pretty much just go and stop.
Absolutely fantastic. When can you lot do a live stream for the Brands Hatch Speed Fest? That's Harry Harvey Townsend. If you get in touch with the chaps at My Supercar, when this COVID buggers off and you can have the Speed Fest again, I'm sure they'll be able to put something together for you guys. So Jonathan Atkinson and Marion Neofitu, good night all. Enjoyed the stream. Well done, guys. Great as always. Lovely to see Jess Shanahan as well. And it was lovely to do the podcast this evening with such an esteemed guest as Jess Shanahan of Racing Mentor. So from us, I've been Robert Lewis. We have Stefan Marsh and Nick Holmes. And our guest tonight was Jess Shanahan. Good night, all. Take care. God bless.
Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
No, that way.
Yeah.
Bye. Thanks. Thank you.
Bye. Bye.